You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast and our match report following Nottingham Forest's 1-1 draw at home with Crystal Palace. In a few minutes, we'll go through the team news, we'll go through the match facts and we will add our thoughts. But before I do that, welcome to you, Baz. Just sum up how you feel after what was quite a testing afternoon for the Forest fans.
Well, first half was disappointing, second half was promising, but ultimately it wasn't the result we wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Rich Ferraro, and just to start off with, we will give you the Forest team news. So there were three changes for the Reds. Matt Sells was in goal. Nico Williams was at right back with Ola Aina returning at left back, and Felipe came in as the centre-half alongside Murillo. In midfield, we had Yates pairing up with Ibrahim Sangare, more on that later, and the attacking three were Morgan Gibbs-White flanked by Hudson-Odoi on the left and Divock Origi on the right, with Chris Wood playing up front. And Forest went behind pretty early in this game. It was after just 10 minutes, but I mean, it wasn't a massive surprise, was it?
No. The fans were in good voice to start with, but
yeah, so we had a little display by Forza. We had our minutes applause for Larry Lloyd.
Mm-hmm. And a bit of chancing for him, which was nice.
Yep.
So we started off making quite a lot of noise, but the team couldn't really reciprocate. And it wasn't that much of a surprise when we went behind. I mean, to be fair, the goal was good. It was a really, really nice through for Lerma, I think it was, put the through ball through.
Yeah.
Completely, like a vertical ball, completely cuts through the centre of our defence in midfield. And then Eze, who's obviously the most dangerous player on the pitch, squares it. He had two men around him, but he managed to square it. And it goes to Mateta, who still had a little bit to do, but comfortably put it past Sells.
Yes, a centre-forward shouldn't be missing from there. Yep. And I would also add in there that Eze, as you mentioned, I mean, he was outstanding. He's shown why he is going to be a contender for the Euros. He is, I think, one of England's best attacking midfielders in a position where England have quite a lot of options at the moment.
Yep.
And I think that well, his involvement was pivotal to Forest's success in this match, really, which we'll talk more about as the game, as the report goes on. But as the game went on, I mean, as you mentioned, Forest fans were aware of the need to be in good voice to try and boost the team. It's something that the club, the players, the manager had all asked for, and I would have to say, and this is something that you commented in our group chats during the first half, is that the atmosphere, once that goal went in, it went flat and the players were flat as well. And we've seen occasions, particularly in the last couple of years, where the fans have found an extra voice, which has given the players an extra gear. And today felt what, like one of those where actually the fans were being very reactive to what the players were producing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say after the goal went in, for the next 5 or 10 minutes, the fans, we stayed in good voice.
Mm.
But we got nothing back from the players. I mean,
I would say there's a general air of resignation.
Yes. And so after maybe half an hour or something, the atmosphere started to turn much more negative.
Yeah, it wasn't hostile, though. It was negative.
It was negative. It was jumping on the players, not jumping on them, not yelling at them, but like, oh, well, he wouldn't be able to make that pass. He's made the wrong choice there. He's that kind of thing. Apart from one player, which was Sangare, who was having a terrible game.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to say, when you said apart from one player, I thought you were going to also point out that there were two vaguely bright lights in the first half of Forest. Number one was Callum Hudson-Odoi, who was the only player who looked like producing anything from an attacking position. And behind him, in left fullback position, Ola Aina, who really showed the experience, the know-how and the energy. You know, we know that we get energy from Toff and from Tavares, but Ola Aina is able to combine that with some good craftsmanship as a fullback, and he was looking to combine as well with Hudson-Odoi. So, but having said that, there's nothing coming out of it.
No.
And the big problem was that Palace were basically playing a 5-2-3, weren't they?
Yeah.
So they had three centre halves, they had wing backs who were sitting pretty deep, and I will give a shout out to Munoz, who is their right wing back, who was in a terrific duel with Hudson-Odoi all game, and that was something that was really, really good to watch, actually. It's quite a nice one for the neutrals, I'd have thought.
Yeah, but I mean, we both commented on this during the first half, which was it didn't matter which part of the pitch the ball was in, we looked like we were outnumbered all the time.
Exactly. So tactically, we were. It's not to do with formations. This is to do with tactics. You know, the distinction I often refer to, because of the way that Palace was set up. So Chris Wood was outnumbered by defenders when he got the ball. We had, when either of the wingers got the ball, either Origi or Hudson-Odoi, then one of the centre-halves would come over and join the wing-back to outnumber them. In midfield, you'd either get a centre-half pushing forward or Eze dropping back, which meant that whichever of Yates and Sangare were near the ball, they weren't going to, there's no way through. And then in the defensive positions, because they had three up front, it meant that our centre-halves, and the goal proved a point, because Lerma played it in the channel between Williams and Felipe, which meant that Felipe was in no man's land and lost. Williams couldn't catch up. Murillo tried to cover, and that's why Mateta had the time and space to shoot. And then history almost repeated itself, because Adam Wharton, who Palace signed as a player, a young player with a good deal of potential. And you know what? That's exactly what I thought watching him. He's a young player with a good deal of potential. And he played a defence splitter for Eze to try and go through. Williams was trying to put him off. He probably just about did enough, but Eze still got a shot away and Sells had to make a decent save.
I thought Sells, actually, another bright point would be Sells, because his positioning and the way he came out for that was spot on.
Yeah, it wasn't just, I mean, positioning was the first bit, and then that classic thing of kind of staying big for as long as possible, which meant that he could parry it and also did enough to not only parry it, but to put it in a position where when Mateta got the rebound, he couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
I think we were doing well to be 1-0 down in that half, and even when Forrest tried to go forward and we're hitting this wall of white shirts, you and I turned to each other and said, this is going to end up 3-0 to Palace, isn't it? There's nothing we can do going forward and they're going to catch us on the break because they're good at it.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. Yeah, we it's not like we weren't attacking. We were piling numbers forward, so we did look really, really shaky on the break when Palace went forward.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of those issues that we've identified. I mean, For Palace tactically to kind of find ways to outnumber us in every position in the park is one thing, but it meant that Forest in midfield were getting Yates and Sangare were having what I can only describe as an absolute nightmare. Both of them were completely overrun. And Yates, you know that sometimes he hasn't got the quality to be able to compete, but he'll keep plugging away. He looked a bit overwhelmed. But then I think that's also down to the fact that Sangare, he looks slow, ponderous, doesn't particularly look fit enough for the Premier League. He's come from the Dutch league where you get that extra yard of time and space, not only in terms of controlling the ball, but that extra yard to have a think about what you're going to do with it. There was only one contribution he made that was even vaguely positive in the first half, which was he managed to intercept what could have been a defensive pass through and take it off someone's toe. I think it might have been Jordan Ayew's toe. But the fact that that's a minor thing that many of you listeners won't even remember probably says it all. And the trouble is that because they were both playing badly and actually they were making each other worse, because it meant that nothing was covered in the middle of the park.
Nothing was covered in the middle of the park. There was no real options. The only way we could get the ball forward was down the wings, and they're playing a back five, so they had that covered. And yeah, we couldn't do anything in the middle of the park. Gibbs White was lost because he couldn't get on the ball. So yeah, they just completely dominated the middle, and Sangare took the ire of a lot of people because, yeah, he kept on misplacing passes. He kept on dawdling on it and then having the ball nicked off his feet.
Yeah.
Or when he did get the ball, his only option would be, or well, the only thing that he could see to do with it was to play it backwards.
Yeah.
So it was not a surprise when he was taken off at half time.
Yeah, so in the break, basically, we saw Alanga stick his shirt on, so we knew who was coming on. It was just a question of who was coming off, and everyone was going, well, probably Origi or Wood. Maybe Woody's picked up an injury again, or you know, something like that. But we also knew that Sangare probably had to come off for his own sake as well as the sake of the team to protect the player. And so we're a little bit surprised, and you said, oh, well, maybe they're going 4-4-2 then, stick Origi up front with Wood, stick Alanga on one wing, and then go for a flat midfield four.
Yeah.
And actually, it wasn't that, was it? It was basically trying to play Alanga as a number 10, Origi still on the right-hand side, but Gibbs White was dropping back a little bit. And it was one of those things that, to be honest, made absolutely no difference to our prospects.
Well, I mean, I think we looked more, we didn't look as quite as incompetent with the ball.
Certainly, well, Gibbs White is better at retaining the ball.
Yeah.
So the fact he was dropping a little bit deeper, I think you noticed with the major tactical change, which has nothing to do with that, which is what Yates was doing in the second half.
Yeah, so Yates went man-to-man with Eze. And I think that probably was the biggest difference, and it actually made a difference for us, because then they didn't have an outlet when they won possession again, and it gave us that little bit of extra space for Gibbs White to actually use the ball.
Yeah.
So I'd say we in this at that first period of the second half, although we didn't really make any chances out of it, we looked much better than we did in the first half.
I wouldn't quite go that far, but I understand what you're saying. Certainly, I think Yates on Eze was a pivotal decision, and I mean, Forrest actually created a chance. So Hudson-Odoi did what he does. He got the ball on the left hand side, cut inside, put a shot across the goal. Henderson had to make a parry. It was it wasn't an outstanding save, but it was a decent save that needed to be made. And he parried it again away out of danger. So that was something. And I'd have to say I did like a blooming that we've had a shot.
Yeah.
And then Eze, despite being man marked, he did have a couple of moments, didn't he? Mm. And interestingly, both of those were when Yates was trying to break.
Yeah.
And then there was one moment in particular, which came later on, but the timeline's not massively important for this. Came later on when Yates tried to break forward, and Will Hughes, immediately when the ball broke to him, he, without even looking, he just swept it forward to where he knew Eze would be, because he knew that Yates wasn't on him.
Yeah.
And luckily Nico was able to do enough. But there was also a slaloming run from Eze, which was He's the kind of player that you've got to love watching as a football fan, isn't he? He did this slaloming run. He looked as if he was going to pull the trigger a couple of times, looked as if he was going to pass it a couple of times. Then he didn't quite get the ball back, and Forrest had a bit of determination to clear it. Now, we'll talk about that kind of thing in a bit more detail in a few minutes, but we also need to talk about the single most important change that happened, which was the substitution that took place on 60 minutes.
Yep, so Origi, Origi did okay. He's been okay for the last few games. Certainly, he's been a lot better than he was earlier in the season, whether that's fitness or whatever. I mean, yeah, he missed pre-season, didn't he? But he did okay without doing anything special. But yeah, 60 minutes, Origi comes off and Gio Reyna comes on. And now when we first signed Gio Reyna, I was very, very excited because I can remember seeing him playing for the USA when he first broke through, and he looked like an amazing player. And obviously things haven't quite worked out for him. I mentioned before the game to you that I'd skimmed through an interview with like the USA international side. And Reyna had said in it, well, I wasn't fit when I first arrived at Forest, and then I got ill, so I'm not really that bothered about not having the chances to start yet.
Which was very interesting to hear, because the Maradona of the Midlands and I had said on Friday Five a couple of times, like, not quite sure why we signed him, because it doesn't seem as though the manager wants to use him. But it turns out, despite being on the bench, he wasn't fit enough to play.
Yeah. But yeah, he comes on, he takes the number 10 slot, so Gibbs-White stays sort of deeper in midfield. Alanga sort of moved out to the wing, to the right wing, to replace Origi. And Reyna sort of makes an immediate impact, so there's a crossfield ball that goes to Hudson-Odoi. Hudson-Odoi sort of does his little shimmy thing where he moves it between both his feet, and then plays it to Reyna, who finds Gibbs-White in space. Gibbs-White puts in this brilliant looping cross. And Chris Wood, all his goals are pretty much the same, but they're all brilliant for it.
Yeah, I have to say that as a football fan, I've absolutely loved every single goal that Chris Wood has scored for Forest, because Every goal he scored in a red shirt has been a great example of how a striker should approach scoring goals.
Yeah.
And with this one, he not only found the position, he got the ball from Gibbs-White, he looked around, he made sure he had the time and space, made sure he knew where the keeper was, and basically backheaded it to flick it over where Henderson was going to get it, to a place where Henderson couldn't reach it. And he did that while still facing the wrong way, basically.
Yeah.
It's all about knowing. This comes with experience, you know. And when we signed him for his experience. And he wasn't really very fit last year, and so he did flatter to deceive. We struggled to fit him into our system. Now, I'm just going to throw this out here, and I suspect I'm going to clip this up for social media, which is to say that isn't it funny how when you play two out-and-out wingers with Chris Wood up front, all of a sudden you look more like scoring?
Yeah. The thing about, as you kind of hinted at there, it's all about positioning and awareness, being in the right place at the right time. And that's one of those things that if you're not like familiar with football, you're like, well, he's just lucky, or there wasn't anything to that. But actually being in the right place at the right time in that way takes absolute skill.
The 1865 Match Report.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
We're pleased to announce that this episode of 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast, is sponsored by Greene King Sport, where football is more than a game. Green Kingsport venues are showing every single televised Forest fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter where you're based, you can catch every single minute of the action. If you download the Green Kingsport app, you won't just get 10% off all drinks anytime there's a match on the TV, but this month there's also free Guinness to be won and the chance to win one of six holidays. And you'll be supporting us here at 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast. Now it's back to your podcast.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
Welcome back to the 1865 Match Report with me, Rich Ferraro, and I'm here with Baz. And we've just talked about Chris Wood's goal. And I think it's fair to say that after Forest scored, there was only... Basically, if Forest weren't in it in the first half, they looked more likely after scoring the equaliser, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't go all our own way, but we were on the front foot. But then, what, we maybe had 10 minutes or so, maybe even less than that, where we had all the ball. The ball didn't basically come out of Palace's half.
Ooh.
And... I mean, they did very well defensively. We didn't really make any... We didn't force any saves out of Henderson, I don't think.
No, not really.
But then it's that whole thing of, like, that... You have a period where you're on top of things and you need to put the ball away because otherwise it's going to go against you. And after that period sort of fizzled out, suddenly we were on the back foot for another 5 minutes or so. And Palace kind of... did the same thing. The ball wouldn't get out of our half and we were forced to make a lot of last-ditch tackles and scrambled defences.
And you made the point that actually the goal galvanised not only the fans, gave the team some belief going forward, but you noticed a distinct change. So we noticed the usual things that come with confidence, like Forrest being able to do some one-touch passing, which that didn't look even remotely likely in the first half. But you also noticed it gave them some belief at the back.
Yeah, I mean, and again, Matt Sells was very good. The chances that Palace made, Sells was outstanding at dealing with them. But on top of that, it was a bit like the Man City game last season under Steve Cooper, where... it was just players just diving in and putting any part of their body in the way of the player or the ball. And I can't really remember seeing the players do that this season. That sort of like they were that like we keep on saying about this is what Luton's got, that they will not pass kind of mentality. Yeah. We showed a bit of that today.
Yeah, and there's so apart from that Eze dribble that we mentioned where there's about four players who were kind of just standing up and just sticking their feet in and everything, and there were players on the ground. Murillo ended up kind of clearing it whilst on the ground. There's also a moment when Ryan Yates did peak Ryan Yates, really, didn't he? He kind of blocked it, he fell over, he managed to clear it while he was on the ground. There were a few tackles. Felipe had a yellow card, and... he was lucky not to get one in the first half, and he absolutely deserved to get this one for taking one for the team, basically. And he really plays on the edge, doesn't he, in those moods. But there are a couple of times when he absolutely, you know, he was just a man mountain and really difficult to get around. Williams as well, we noticed him kind of getting stuck in. And Nico, understandably, given his experiences in midweek with Wales... he looked a little bit demoralised, a little bit knackered, didn't he? But the effort he put in, particularly after he scored, he found another gear, didn't he?
Yeah.
And so that was really important. And like you say, that is what we need. And the risk of stating the blooming obvious, as football fans, we'll forgive a lot, but the one thing we won't forgive is a lack of effort or a perceived lack of desire. And you've seen that in terms of the reactions of the fans for the matches over the last few weeks, haven't you?
Yeah. And there was probably about 70 minutes or something, so maybe 10 minutes after we'd scored, and they got a corner. And in my mind, I'm going, oh, God, us defending a set piece when when we've been on top. And I think it was that corner where the ball just fizzed across the face of goal and hit the far post.
Yeah, Munoz got a header.
Yeah.
Hit the post. Luckily, it went out. And then, actually, a Palace player chopped down a Forest defender.
Yates chopped down, pulled down Yates in the box. But that sort of attitude, coupled with that little bit of luck, meant that we saw out the Palace pressure. Mm. And then for the next sort of 15 minutes or however long was left of the game, again, it was all Forest pressure. It was Forest with possession. The ball was mainly at the Palace end of the pitch. And there was a point after that, so maybe 75, 80 minutes or something, where I said to the bloke next to me, actually, we've got them on the ropes here. We deserve to win this.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw it out there that the kind of the ding-dong nature of the last 20 minutes or so meant that this game was a really good advert for Championship football.
Yeah. I mean,
it reminded me very much of being in the Championship.
Yeah, there wasn't, and apart from like the through balls from Eze and whatever, there wasn't a great deal of quality on show.
So, and just like with Championship football, where you get skillful players, so the skillful players for them was obviously Eze, for us was Hudson-Odoi.
Hudson-Odoi.
Most pertinently. And, you know, they're showing that skill, but then there isn't really a huge amount coming out of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lack of quality.
And they show their skills in, like, three moments in the entire 90 minutes.
Yeah, it reminded me very much of Championship football. Now, I'm going to use that. So, let's just quickly summarise what happened in the rest of the match. So, there was an interesting moment where no one really knew what was going on, but Ola Aina went in for a challenge. Jefferson Lerma went down like he'd had his leg broken. Aina actually hurt himself in the challenge. And then he made a point of getting up and going up to Lerma and making the point that that wasn't acceptable, the way Lerma went down. And actually, the ref wasn't... I'm no fan of today's ref. There were moments, as always. I think the ref was generally fine at best. But I have some sympathy with the ref in this situation because he can't really give a yellow card to Lerma for diving because it probably was a foul, but Lerma did dive.
Yeah.
And he did exaggerate to try and get Aina in trouble. And then there was a moment where the ref kind of said, hold on. He was obviously listening to something in his ear. And then he called Lerma over. And I was saying, but he can't send him off for diving and he can't give him a yellow card by VAR, so what's the point?
Yeah, and I'm assuming it was just, right, I know what you did, so don't do it again, or something along those lines. But it was, I think it was Yates or Gibbs-White was stood next to the ref when Lerma was getting that message, and they looked incensed as well.
Yeah, I think Lerma got away with one. And you and I had the conversation. I mean, we love defensive midfielders. And you and I had the conversation. Lerma, what a player. He's a great player. But as with so many, and I'm going to make a massive sweeping statement here. As with so many South Americans, hello, Felipe. Brilliant player, but then gets himself in trouble for no reason. Yeah. And kind of plays those games. So again, a player who plays on the edge a little bit. The reason that the ref wasn't the most popular person on the pitch wasn't necessarily for any decisions, but Palace were time-wasting from the moment they scored in the 10th minute.
Yeah.
Ref wasn't even remotely interested, was he?
No, and this is kind of weird because, like, at the start of the season where keepers were getting booked because they were urging that they were going to play it short, then looked around, saw everyone was marked, and then urged the team to move upfield so they could play it long, and then they were getting booked for that.
Yeah.
And then we were getting whatever, 10, 15 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the game. Suddenly, it's like that's just gone out the window. No one cares.
Yeah. Although apparently there was 15 minutes of stoppage time at Sheffield United, so we don't know the details. We're recording this straight after getting back from the match, so I guess we'll find out about that. But yeah, And it's that lack of consistency, isn't it? This is what drives fans absolutely bonkers. And then you look at things like goal kicks, and we know what Henderson can do because we saw him do it for us last season. But also, there's no point talking to someone and saying you shouldn't be doing that if you're not actually going to punish them when they do it straight away afterwards. And then I also did point out to the bloke next to me, it's like, in a way, it makes no difference, because has anyone ever seen a keeper get 2 yellow cards for time wasting and get sent off? I mean, we had Lee Camp back in the day, we had Bruce Samba, and neither of them ever got sent off for time wasting.
Sent off for other things, maybe. But...
yeah, exactly, exactly. So let's, you know, we'll draw a line under the actual match. It was 1-1. Nuno admitted that Forest were bad in the first half. I don't think he could have done anything other than say it's bad. So the reaction was a positive, but at the same time, I think we did enough. We were more dominant. We controlled the game in the second half. Palace were a tough team to play. They reduced the spaces, which is exactly what we talked about earlier. And Chris Wood's goal was a good finish. I think that was the only solution that he had. We need Chris, we need goals, and he is delivering. On Matt Sells, this is what we want our goalkeeper to do, to help us to stay in the game and give us opportunities to go again. The crucial thing is that, having dropped into the relegation zone without playing a game, we are out of the relegation zone, albeit on goal difference. How important do you think that is, Baz?
I think might have been Nuno's interview on the radio on the way home. He tried to downplay it, or someone did.
Well, Nuno said, actually, it's good to be out of the relegation zone, and Chris Wood said, I'm not bothered.
Oh, yeah, that was it, Chris Wood, yeah. I think it's important, because just sitting there for another week, oh no, obviously we've got Fulham coming up,
yeah.
But sitting there like that, knowing that it was in our hands to get out of it, would have been difficult, I think. It would have just weighed on the players a little bit.
Does it matter, because... like many people, I was thinking to myself, from Palace and Fulham, we should be aiming for at least 4, maybe 6 points. Mm. So if we're going to get 4 points, well, we need to get a win on Tuesday. Is that something that you think will weigh upon the fans as well as the players' minds?
I think it will weigh upon the fans, definitely. That's the thing that what I was trying to get across in the group chat is at half-time was... The era of Steve Cooper is gone. That era where when the team are struggling, then the fans will give them that extra boost to take them over the edge. That's not the case anymore. And the first half in particular, it felt almost like the pre-Cooper, whether it was Houghton or Montagnier or one of those other...
Martin O'Neill.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Where if things aren't happening on the pitch... the fans get restless, and that seems to be the kind of feel at the moment.
Mm. And obviously maybe this is just down to the fact that there's been a 2-week break, but there's a bit of argument on social media about, is Nuno doing a good job? And of course it turns out that Forest are looking at other options anyway, because that's what Marinakis does.
Well, to be fair, that's what every club should be doing.
Yeah.
You should have a succession plan no matter what happens. But I think, given the situation, I like, you look at Glasner, because obviously Glasner was rumoured to be one of those that Forest wanted to come. And you look at Palace, I didn't see any signs of a very distinctive style. Mm-hmm. From them. Like Glasner's one of the Red Bull managers. They didn't look like a Red Bull kind of side. They've obviously been hit by injuries, and Elise and Eze have been in and out of the side because of the injuries and whatever. What's his face, the defender, he's out as well. Mm-hmm. So they're weakened, and so Glasner hasn't really had the chance to put his stamp on the side, maybe. But if he'd come to Forest, it would be exactly the same.
Yeah.
And so the advantage, I think Nuno's kind of been playing with one hand tied behind his back, and I can't see anyone else doing a better job.
And in our group chat, I made the point that if they were to remove Nuno, so when it was 1-0 down and looking pretty bleak, let's just say that it was getting a bit testy in the group chat. But I made the point that all that would happen is that would make us into this season's Southampton. Two managers, neither of whom could keep us up, when actually the manager who is the one who's most likely to be able to galvanise the players, who's had control over the players coming in and so on and so forth, is the first manager who is in charge at the start of the season in the first place. Now,
what I do think is interesting with Nuno, though, is because he comes across very softly spoken and very measured in his interviews, I was very, very surprised when I read that thing about him punching something when he found out about the deduction, because I wonder if he's not the same in the dressing room.
No, I would imagine that. I'd imagine there's some steel behind there. And also, remember, he's a goalkeeper. So we all know about goalkeepers, don't we? To finish off today, just want to have a little thought. I mean, we've talked about Chris Wood. We've talked about how if you're going to play with Wood, I mean, I said to the bloke next to me, I've always thought throughout his career that Divock Origi is somebody who's been stealing a living a little bit. And I've not seen anything in a Forest shirt to change my mind on that. Why are we not playing two wingers? Why are we not playing Alanga and Hudson-Odoi either side? Because especially when we've got Wood up front, surely that's what we should be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I would say you haven't seen Divock Origi in the last few weeks. He's been much, much better.
But he's not a winger.
He's not a winger, but like we were saying about Hudson-Odoi doing the little shimmies and stuff like that, Origi's been doing that. It's just he's not been capable of finishing and his positioning's not quite right because he's not a winger. But yeah, so if Langer and Hudson-Odoi are both fit and we've got Wood up front, it makes perfect sense to me to play them. I would also say that I actually quite liked having Rayner behind.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is something that, you know, we touched upon the impact that substitution made, but also Rayner playing as the number 10, I think I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's something that Forrest turned to. I think Nico Dominguez, when the substitution was made at half-time, and it was Alanga coming on playing as a number 10. I think Nico Dominguez might have been probably a little bit annoyed, yeah. But the other thing that I will say is, especially once we had the three of Hudson-Odoi, Rayner and Alanga behind Wood, in the first half we noticed Wood dropping back, trying to touch the ball. And then after those substitutions were made, Wood barely touched the ball. But his game is not about touching the ball. It's about getting the ball to him in the right places so he can score a brilliant goal, a brilliant finish like he did.
Mm.
We should be doing that, shouldn't we?
Yeah. And, I mean, the only thing with playing Rayner there is obviously then what you do with Gibbs-White. I don't mind playing Gibbs-White in that sort of central midfield role. I think he's got the work rate, he's got the passing ability, and he does tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he'd be wasted there playing him there for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for that. Okay, well, thank you very much to you, Baz. And we will be back after Tuesday night's game against Fulham. We really want to be racking up the points. We really want to make sure we don't slip back into the relegation zone. So we will hope for a better result. It's getting to the point where we don't actually care that much about performance as long as we get the results. And we want to say thank you to you, listener, for joining us. Come on, you Reds.
Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.